Hello, everyone, and welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with Denise DeGaulle. Hey, Denise.
Hi, Jean.
And we're talking about mindfulness and stress management. And we were just talking in between conversations about there's so much to cover. So, where are we headed now? What's our next thought process?
Want to talk a
We
little
talked
bit
about,
still.
oh, I was just going to do a quick recap. So,
Go ahead.
we talked about mindfulness and the importance of that and just the managing of stress. And so where are we headed next?
I still want to talk a little bit more about mindfulness
Okay,
because
good.
there's so many different aspects to this. And again, I mentioned earlier, mindfulness and meditation are not exactly the same thing. You know, one kind of floats into the other, but mindfulness really is about staying in the moment and actually experiencing what's happening in front of you. And the more you practice this, I mean, like everything, it's a practice. The more you actually do train your brain to stay in the moment. Now, obviously, if we're planning for a trip, you know, we're planning our finances, which, if that's the case, we turn to you, Jean.
I can help.
If we're planning those things, that's different. You know, we're thinking about the future, but we're still being mindful because we're sitting at a place and we're thinking of that particular topic. You know, we're not thinking, okay, we're planning this vacation. When, oh, by the way, you know, all of these different tangents. So, and that can get confusing. And that when people say to me, I feel like I'm so scattered because they have this thought and then they have that thought, and they're not actually paying attention to the thought that is in front of them. Interesting. I found this piece interesting. A couple of years ago, there was a an article. It was an article in Scientific American, which we get here at the house. My husband's been getting it, the magazine, for years. And apparently, after an 8-week course specifically on mindfulness, what they found was truly, you can literally change your brain. The brain's flight or fight center, the amygdala, I'm never going to say that right. Your flight or fight center has actually been shown to decrease with mindfulness practices. Now, this was an 8-week course. So we got to start somewhere, right? What if we went, you know, an 8-week course? What if we continued 12 weeks, 12 months, 2 years? And it's one of those things, the more we do it, like I said, it's a practice. The more we do it, the easier it gets. To the point where you don't have to think about it so much. Like, oh, I have to be mindful about you know, what I'm eating or, you know, what I'm saying, whatever it might be. So I think that was something that really surprised me because I love the science piece behind all of this. You know, and luckily they have been doing studies, they, whoever they are, right? There has been truly scientific research from medical centers around the country and probably around the world, but around the country specific to mindfulness and how it helps with stress management, how it helps with our overall health and wellness.
I mean, we think about what our daily habits are and or not habits, good or bad, whatever they are. This is a no judgment zone, but something that you said made this come to mind. And it's the triggers. We have to figure out what our triggers are, or we have to figure out the triggers to realize that we are not being in the present moment. And one of the things that comes to mind is that if we're sitting outside, or if we're sitting someplace, or we're just being someplace, and what we're doing is we're on our phone. And the what I, what ha what's happened now in society is that we're so attached to these ridiculous rectangles of mind numbing, which I am totally addicted to it. So I fight with it all the time, is that we're not sitting quietly in our thoughts. We're not sitting quietly in the moment. We're not listening to the birds. Whatever it is, we're needing to make sure that we are doing something, which quite often becomes mind numbing and just checking out rather than sitting sitting with it.
Yeah, we're always trying to be doing something. You're right. It's we don't have the ability, for whatever reason, thank you, phones and media being available 24/7. We don't have quiet time. We don't put that into our daily schedule. And it's true, like when we go for a run outside, I don't ever run with music. If I'm outside, I don't want to run with music. That's time to be out in nature and experience nature. Now, Mark is the opposite. If he's running, he kind of needs to be distracted from the physical activity. And that, for whatever reason, that just works for him. It doesn't work for me. And maybe because I am more in tune to the mindfulness piece and being out in nature, as a healing resource for me. And so you're right, we do, we're always distracting ourselves, and distracting ourselves from our own thoughts. So we
Oh,
mentioned
that's a good one.
it, yeah. Yeah, distracting ourselves from our own thoughts. I mentioned earlier in another in our past episode about, what are our core values? Like, what are the things that are important to us? It's amazing to me how many times when I'm working with a new client that they don't know because they haven't thought about it. They haven't really taken the time to think about themselves and who they are and what they enjoy. That's a piece that always surprises me. That women, especially when they get to that empty nest time in their life, they don't even know what they enjoy anymore. And so that's kind of where that distraction kind of fills that void. I see this more and more with my clients.
I quite often have to watch myself or pay attention to why am I picking up my phone? And am I picking up my phone because I'm supposed to be doing something that's constructive? Or am I picking up my phone because I'm either avoiding doing something or just avoiding deciding to do something or just avoiding?
So you make a good point. For those of us who have been what my mother would say, overachievers, in my opinion, I was just an achiever. I was achieving things, but she loved the phrase overachiever. And we're always, it's ingrained in us at a very young age that we're always supposed to be doing something, that we have to be productive. And to be productive, we've got to do stuff. Well, if we're always doing stuff, we're actually, we're always in this do, go, go, go mode. And I think what happens so often is we keep doing the same things over and over, whether we enjoy it or not, whether it's helping us or not. So think of this, in the morning, and I probably know the answer to this. When you get up in the morning and you have your cup of coffee or cup of tea, lately I've been drinking coffee in the morning, and typically it's tea. What are you doing?
Well, it's what I've so for me, the good part is I've already done some things first. So usually before that happens, I've gone to a 6 o'clock yoga class. And so that helps. But there are times where that and that cup of coffee for me is decaffeinated too. So it's I don't need it. Unfortunately, I can't have it. So I don't, but fortunately, I don't need it to function. So as we know, other people that were around
Yes,
that
so
actually
other people we
do.
definitely know. Okay, so think of it this way.
So what am I doing? But to answer your question, because I was avoiding your question because I don't like my answer. But what am I doing? That I sometimes I'm reading a book in the morning before I start work. I'll read a book, and especially if the sun is shining, I'll go outside and read a book. So that's an okay thing. But this morning I was on my dumb phone for that 20 minutes before I was going to start work. Because it wasn't enough time to do anything, right? So,
Reading the book, though, to me, that's a mindfulness practice.
I agree. Yes, I'm not, yes, I was not
Completely
dissing
agree.
that. Yes,
And
I would,
also,
yes.
when you mentioned going to yoga, I mean, you can't be in a yoga class and in a yoga pose and not be mindful of what's going on at the moment. So I think it is important to
Oh, I
recognize that.
disagree that. Oh, no. This is not a friendly podcast. I disagree with that because sometimes I'm in that pose and I'm saying really nasty things because I'm really uncomfortable.
It hurts.
And it sometimes it takes a little while. Let's be honest with everybody here. Sometimes it take this morning, I've got some physical issues. So I was really achy today. And it took me mentally probably 20 minutes to get through feeling sorry for myself and do what I can. So yeah.
But you proved my point though. You were thinking about what was happening at that moment.
That's true.
You
That's
were
true.
rehearsing how uncomfortable you were,
Yeah, good
right?
point. Okay.
You weren't thinking, oh, I have that client at 2 o'clock today.
Oh, that's true. Okay, yes, I was in the moment. It just wasn't a positive thought
It wasn't a
process.
very tranquil moment. And to be quite honest, between you, me, and the lamppost and everybody that's listening, I've never found yoga to be like that relaxing for me because I'm a runner, and my body is always like tensed up from running. Yoga is, it's stretching for me. I don't think of it as, a yoga practice. I think of it as this is something I need to do to enhance my running.
Yes, you are supposed to be able to touch your toes, Miss Runner.
I can do that. It's easier if I touch somebody else's toes, though. Mark, can I touch your toes?
Yeah.
I can still touch my toes.
There you go.
After a run, maybe not. So truly, just to get back to mindfulness, what I would like people to start doing is to take just a little bit of time every day to stop, enjoy the moment, whether you're outside. I'm not going out there today, it's too cold. Whether you're outside enjoying the sun or, feeling the wind, on your face, or the cold on your face, just listening or just being, breathing, just breathing. And that's something we'll talk about in another session is a little bit more about breathing techniques. Something that I have found has been, has really elevated my ability for mindfulness. I don't like to call it a mindfulness practice, but it's give it a name. What I do is I follow positive intelligence. I have an app that stops me 4 times a day, 2 minutes, just 2 minutes, and it helps me. Sometimes it's centering by breathing. Sometimes I'm focused on person or a situation. Sometimes I'm just sitting there trying to decide, how does my body feel right now? Because it's amazing to me, and this piece I think is important, because so often, our body is uncomfortable, and our bodies are telling us what it needs. We just don't always listen. This is another piece of this why mindfulness is really important. What if your shoulder sore, you have a kink in your neck, what's going on there? If it's sore, maybe do something today. Maybe put some essential oil on it, maybe rub it. Because before you know it, and this happened to me when I was in my busy corporate career, my shoulders literally, when I would walk into a room, I saw pictures of like a video of me at a conference. And literally, I looked like my ears were attached, my shoulders were attached to my ears, because I was so tense throughout the years, and I never even paid attention to it. And somebody mentioned it to me that particular day, and I was like, well, what do you mean? Like, they literally put their hands on my shoulders and
And push them
pushed my
down.
shoulders down and said, this is where your shoulders are supposed to be. And actually, it was uncomfortable because my shoulders hadn't been there in natural position in a very long time. So
Your
with
body got
mindfulness, we
used
can
to that
actually,
level.
right, we can pay attention to what our body is actually telling us.
It's good. I like it. Thank you, Denise.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Can play the music anytime, Fred.
I think you went to get more coffee.
No, we went to the bathroom. We were recording something the other day. I can't remember which one it was. And he said, "How long before you're done?" I have to run to the bathroom. I said, "You have time for number one, not number two."
Funny.
Oh. Should we
It's
just
it, and it's
start?
funny. I talk about my
Yeah.
shoulders because my shoulders are always. You know, it's funny because I'm short. What I notice this all the time. I have a bit of a forward head,
Oh.
but I do this a lot because
Oh.
everybody, when I'm talking to them, they're up here. They're not at my level.
Oh. Oh, I
So
never
I
thought about
notice,
that.
yeah, I notice that like when I start to sit, like my head is, and I'm like, wait a minute. It took a lot of years for me to honestly to realize to get to a point where I notice it. Yeah, it's
Wow.
kind of crazy.
Should we just start another segment?
Yeah, we could do like 3, 2, 1, pause for a couple seconds, and then let's start.
Three, number two, number one. So, Denise, we are talking about mindfulness and stress management this month. And we did talk about both of those subjects, and we're waiting. Why? And we want to start. Yeah, we did, but not anymore because we just stopped. Hello, everyone. This is Jean Gallagher, Discover Rising Tides. And I want to just take a moment to talk about my friend, Denise Segal. I am honored to call her as a friend, and I'm so grateful that she gives us her insight during our shows each show and talks about healthy living, eating real food. You hear Denise say, "Eat real food," a lot. Well, she means it, and she knows what she's talking about. She is an amazing healthy living coach, curator at Living Healthy List. And if you ever have any questions about what is real food? Why does it matter? How does that apply to me? How do I change? What do I need to do? How do I even create a healthy living shopping list? Make sure that you call her. She is your healthy living coach. And you can find her at healthylivinglist.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome. My name is Jean Gallagher, founder of Discover Rising Tides, and welcome to Discover Rising Tides, how the outside makes the inside better, where we explore the importance of the outdoors and maintaining life balance. And through this series, we are talking with phenomenal women and business owners to understand their journey. And today, our guest is Luann Beekler. And Luann, I'm so excited. We have so much to talk about. And so give us a quick little couple of sentence description of what you do, or who you are, or something fun about you.
I was ready for the fun one, Jean, so I'm
Go
going
with
to
the
get
fun one.
there.
Go with the fun one.
And I like to ask people or tell people that I'm a parrot head and then ask them if they know what a parrot head is. Do you know what a
So
parrot head is, Jean?
I'm going to ask the question because I think I do. But you go ahead. Tell me, what is it?
Parrot heads are Jimmy Buffett fans, and we still love Jimmy, even though we lost him last year. I still celebrate him. He will always be in my heart.
What a loyal fan club he has had for so many years.
Yeah. Blessed. He had a blessed life. And the last song that he, I think it was the last one he wrote, his newest album was released in November. And it's called Bubbles Up. And it's about diving, but it's comparison to following your guiding light. Follow the bubbles, follow the light up to the surface. And it's just so powerful when you listen to it. So I encourage our audience to go find it, Bubbles Up by Jimmy Buffett. It's a beautiful song. And not anything like his other ones. Way
How
more
so?
mellow and way more mellow and introspective than Cheeseburger in Paradise or Margaritaville. Right. So, more probably along where he was on his journey at that part of his life when he did that. And I heard, John Lennon, I think it was, somebody complimented him on that. It was the best they'd ever heard his voice.
Wow.
It really showed the true dynamic of his voice and the skill that he had. He will long be remembered, for sure.
And isn't it true that, you know, whenever you hear Cheeseburgers in Paradise or any of those other songs, you have to smile and you have to feel happy inside?
Yeah. And sing along. Usually in my car, I won't do that here.
So other than being a parrot head.
I teach people, Jean, to follow their heart and to live their passions. One of my mentors is Ivan Meisner, founder of the BNI organization. And he says, live in your flame, not in your wax. Live in your flame, not in your wax. Yeah, absolutely. That's where I want people to live and enjoy their lives, because so easy to get stuck in the muck of this world, especially when it mostly throws negativity at us. And we have to learn how to combat that negativity. And
it's not just the world that's throwing, we're creating our own negativity too.
That's so true. That's true.
Yeah.
This monkey mind right here between our ears.
Yeah.
We allow to control our thoughts instead of our heart. We got to live from our heart space and then really enjoy it and own it every day. We're lost in this rat race, this struggle, you know, the old hamster wheel, right? And I help people get off of that and build confidence in themselves.
It's so easy to say, live in your heart, but it's hard to do.
It is.
Why is it so hard?
Because most people are not doing it. And so you feel different. You feel weird. Well, I said my motto, right? Characters welcome here. Characters welcome here. I like to meet characters. I love people who are living out loud, you know, just who they are and who they're meant to be. And that's, if we could all do that without fear of judgment or criticism, then everybody would be happier. I say when you get connected to your life's flow, everything comes easier. It's just because it feels easier. It feels easier when you're being you. Stop trying to be somebody else. But we have a problem with comparison, and we're always comparing ourselves to other people. Well, there are no two people the same. And so everyone's experience is going to be different. Therefore, how they outwardly present themselves is going to be different, and be okay with that.
So connecting to life's flow. Let's talk about that for just a second, because how do we recognize that it's the flow versus the comparison piece, right? Or what we're thinking should be.
Yeah, I got to tell you a story to explain that, right?
Because I love really stories.
Hard. It's really hard. So it was about, I don't know, 2 or 3 years into my work as a facilitator of the Passion Test. And I had had a busy, busy holiday season. It was January. I looked at my calendar and it was busy, 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 but I felt lazy. I said, I said to my friend, why do I feel lazy? When I look at my calendar, it's jam-packed. And she said, Luann, could it be that you have arrived at a place where your work is no longer work to you and you're having enough fun and enjoying it? So it just flows. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I have arrived at that moment where life is in flow for me and I'm just doing what I love. So even though I'm busy, 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 I'm happy, happy, happy. So you really got to feel it, right? You got to feel it. And if you don't feel good, then you're living in the wrong place. If life's getting you down, if it's hard to get out of bed to go to work in the morning, those kinds of things, then something's not quite right. You're not in your flow. And so the tool of the Passion Test helps people to sort of peel back the onion and uncover their top 5 passions. And I encourage them to set a course to living that in their life. And I give them tools to doing that. And you will need to use the tools for your entire life, because it's too easy for the rest of society and that comparison to slip back in.
So let's talk about the Passion Test for just a second. What is that and how is it and how does it work? Because it's not just So let me start this over, kind of start this over. The coaching piece, some people will find a coach for their business, or some people will find a coach for their personal, but the passion test really bridges the gaps between both, and it's applicable to your whole life, not just the silos of your life.
Yeah, so let me start at the beginning, if I might.
You may.
I always like to ask people if they're familiar with the Strength Finder. Have you ever done the Strength Finder, Jean?
I have not. We yeah, we
Okay,
talked about that briefly
the Strength
before.
Finder is a test that you can go online and take, and I highly encourage it. Anybody can do it. It's about $20 to go take this test. It's 120 questions. On a Likert scale, do you like this situation or not? And then it spits out your top five strengths, natural skills, characteristics, talents that you carry. And I don't profess to understand how that test works. It's now owned by Gallup. And what I know though is when it spit out my top five, I went, oh my gosh, that's me. Holy
Wow.
buckets, that's exactly me. And so I call that the scientific methodology at getting to know who you were designed to be. Okay. The passion test is the heart and soul methodology at getting at who you were designed to be. Your passions are those things you care the most about, those things you love the most. And it's silly to think that you would have to go through a process to identify that, but it's because we fail to listen to our heart. We're stuck up here and it pulls people back in here. So it's not a test that you can take by yourself. You have to do it with someone else. So that's why we call ourselves passion test facilitators, because we facilitate you through a process that helps you to peel back the onion and get to those things in your heart that you care about the most. And originally, and if you read the book, which is a best-selling book, The Passion Test, it's going to tell you how to do the process. Please, audience, never ever do it yourself. It turns out differently because you're stuck up here than with your when you're talking with someone else and allowing them to walk you through it. You're able to drop into your heart space. And that's when we really start to uncover. We also say you don't take the passion test just once and never again. It's a journey of gaining clarity on who you are and learning to own that and step fully into that. So I have women that come back to a women's retreat that I do every single year, and they take it again, and they go deeper and deeper. And then one day, one of them jumped up and she said, "I know what I need to do." And I'm like, "What? Great!" She goes, "I want to be a passion test facilitator like you." I'm like, "Super!" know? And she's a totally different human being otherwise. She's a massage therapist. She's an introvert. She's quiet. Right. And I'm this bold extrovert out there in the world. And so we attract two different kinds of clients. Even though we live in a small town of only 5,000 people, we still, you know, I don't worry about sharing customers with her, clients who need this work because so many people need this work to uncover what they really care the most about and live in that space. I think the pandemic did some good for us. I
Oh,
think
really?
the pandemic did some good for us to really think about what matters most to us. We found ourselves back in our homes with our family and enjoying that time with our families and going, whoa, wait a minute. Why am I spending so much time at the office and doing this job I don't like? And people are thinking, life's too short. Like our mortality was showing to us as well, right? Life's too short. Let's enjoy it now. And enjoying the wilderness and the outdoors is one of those things that grounds you back into your heart as well. So I love doing this work. We take women into the Boundary Waters canoe area and we'll sit on a rock in the trees in the woods by the lake, and I'll take them through the passion test process and
Wow.
see.
So let's talk about the Boundary Waters quickly for
Yes.
people that aren't aware. And I want to go back to the other passion test too, but first we're going to talk about the Boundary Waters. So where are they? What are they? And why are they so special?
Oh, goodness gracious. The Boundary Waters is. I'm not going to be able to quote the number of acreage of lakes in northern Minnesota that are all connected by portages, which are hikes across land between the lakes, so that you can travel in this wilderness. I want to say it's like 6,000 square miles or something. I don't know. I won't quote it, but
it's big.
It's big. You know, they call Minnesota the land of 10,000 lakes, but it's really, there's 10,000 just up there. You know?
Wow. Yeah.
That's where the majority of them are. And there is no technology. There is no motorboats for a majority of it. So mm-hmm. you can't go in by motorboat. Only on the perimeter, there's a few lakes that still allow motorboats. And it's a no-fly zone. So airplanes can't fly over either. Once in a while, you'll see small float planes, but usually that's rare too. When you cross over to, into Canada, into what's called, the Quatico, which is Canada's portion of this, then they do a lot more of that fly-in stuff up there. So you can get to the same kind of tranquil, no technology. Literally, your phones won't work out there, right? Best you can do is keep it to keep time if you want or not. Oh, and we use them for our cameras because we take a lot of pictures. So my sister and I grew up going into the Boundary Waters canoe area, and I tell people I traded in my tent for a hotel room when I went to hotel school. And so I hadn't been back there for about 15 years. And my father-in-law passed, and he wanted his ashes spread in the Boundary Waters. And I went back with my husband and his family, and I was like, oh my God, why did I ever leave this beautiful spiritual space to step away from all that is our crazy world and just be with nature? And so my sister and I actually took my sister through the passion test when she was deciding what she wanted to do when she retired from teaching. And she said, you know what I want to do? I want to take women on wilderness adventures. I'm like, I want to go with you. I don't remember how the, you know, wilderness tools, and she had all the gear and everything, you know. And I'm like, I'll be the spiritual guide and you can be the wilderness guide. And that's how we take women into the Boundary Waters. And when you go into the Boundary Waters, you can only have a permit for up to 9 people at a time at one campsite, and we say 8. Her and I are 2, so we only take in 6 other women with us.
It's very personal.
Yeah.
It's That's a very phenomenal.
Personalized experience. And one of the things my sister's always believed in is that no matter what your experience or your skill set, we're going to make it work. We're going to make it work, you know? So we adjust based on who shows up. And what I find out often in my events is that like-minded people show up, that they're just attracted to one another, right? And it, like, one of my retreats, everybody in the room seemed to have been dealt with narcissistic parents or a person. And so they had a lot to talk about, right? And a lot in common. So it just seems the same happens in the Boundary Waters, is that we have complementary skill levels show up, and it works out beautifully. And we've had to adjust sometimes when people can't move as fast as we might want to. And that's okay. We're going to be okay with that, because you can adjust your journey along the way. When you know the wilderness so well, you can make adjustments to your trip. So it's always a beautiful thing. And I'm thinking about adding a version of it where we don't do the hard work of portaging and carrying out everything we need in and everything we need back out again, right? But rather to get a cabin in one location. My favorite place is the Gunflint Trail. Get a cabin on the Gunflint Trail and take day trips from there. So you can sleep in a bed at night, we can have a shower, you know, those things that you don't do when you're on a 5-day journey into the wilderness.
So what changes do you see when people show up into this unknown situation for them and they're not necessarily knowing what's going to happen or where they're physically going to be? And then you toss the passion test into there. What changes do you see evolve during this short time?
So first of all, no matter how many times I try and explain what it's like, nobody gets it until you're there. And then they go, oh, this is different. This is harder than I expected. But they always also figure out, I can do it. I can do it. When push comes to shove, you do what you need to do to survive, right? And really, it's not like a survivor show, okay? It's really not. But you see that I can do this, I can handle it. And so they build up confidence in themselves. They open up to other women. They think about things that they're living with at home that maybe they don't want to anymore, right? Mm-hmm. And so we try and do the passion test at the beginning or in the first couple of days so mm-hmm. that they can work with what they've learned through the rest of the journey, sort of let it sink in. There's other parts to it where we go into more detail and create what we call markers, which are descriptions of what it will look like when I'm living that passion full out at a 10. And they start to dive into that, right? And really create that visual. And one of the tools of the passion test is vision boarding. Create mm-hmm. a vision board. So when you get home, you create a vision board of where am I taking my life from here? And one group that due to weather, which you have to be able to adjust to the weather in the Boundary Waters, due to weather, we didn't get to the passion test until a couple of, almost towards the end.
Mm.
And that group of women said to me, thank goodness.
Wow.
Thank goodness we didn't do this earlier. We needed to all get to know each other so we felt comfortable sharing in the group. And they felt like it was more powerful towards the end. Hey, I just let God work it out. You know, like I make a plan and what then we play through it. And we see what happens. You know what I mean? And nature helps us with that. And so all of them have been good. And they always walk away with a newfound confidence and spirit in their heart, I think, from the passion. Mm.
It's amazing. And just there's this magic to unplugging.
Oh yeah.
And imagine to unplugging when you're outside and you have, because you have no choice. You can say that you're going to take a break from social. People it kills me. They post on social media that they're going to take a break from social media, or they post on social media that they're back into it because they took a break from social media. But it's hard to judge what that break really was. And it's so hard to completely step away, even if you have the best intentions. But if you're someplace where it just doesn't work, it's the best way to fully unplug.
Yeah. I mean, again, because you don't have a choice. Your phone's
right.
not going to work. You can't reach out. You can't do any of those things. Right. And so you're stuck with the conversation of the few people you're with or not at all, mm-hmm. which is often mm-hmm. My niece went with us once and she likes her alone time and she'd go sit on the other side of the island or find herself a personal spot that was hers.
Mm-hmm.
So she could just be with herself, which is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a lot of it out there, completely unplugged.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't, I unplugged from the radio for many years. I mm-hmm. would not listen to the radio in my car. So that was alone time. Anytime I was driving, I was just with myself and my thoughts. You know, of course, you still got to focus on driving. But but again, it's really not completely unplugged, even though I turned the radio off for a few years and then I just came from back from a conference in New Orleans and it was all about voices and music and not caring what you sound like and singing anyway, you know, kind of thing. And I'm like, I had to turn that radio back on. Because that's fun too. And that's freeing to just sing in the car when nobody else is listening.
So we've been talking about retreats and the passion test, but this is also applicable in the business environment too, correct?
Yes, absolutely. So it was originally designed as an individual tool for individuals and life coaching, but then mm-hmm. we soon realized it could be applied in business. And really in business, what it does is it helps you to identify the core values for your company.
Mm-hmm.
So we call them passions still, but lots of people turn it back into their core values. That's okay, same difference. It's the foundation on which we live in our businesses. And then from that foundation of your core values, you create culture. And when you have culture around values that you hold, right, passions that you care about, you attract like-minded people into your organization, either for your team or as your clients, because they go, yeah, I can get on board with that. And it helps engage employees when I work it with a business that's already in existence, already maybe even has their core values, but then we allow the employees to identify their passions and find out how that aligns with the company. It's so funny because intuitively, I think we find ourselves in the right places of employment and jobs and what have you, but we're not consciously aware of it. And everybody's complaining around the water cooler, so we got to do that too. No, we don't have to do that too, right? I worked with a young lady who was a nurse, and through the pandemic, right, nurses, all of our medical providers, right, beat up, beat down with so much stress, right? And she was thinking about getting out of nursing. And we went through the passion test. She had a side business, like a skincare business, Mary Kay or Rodan and Fields or something. Anyway, and she came through the process and she went, I got to go back to nursing. I got to go back to nursing. I'm a nurse at heart. I want to care for people when they're in need. And this is the way I fulfill that. And then she could go back to work and persevere through the stress and challenges of the of that profession, right? And that's what we need to know, our passion. Because passion doesn't mean that life is always coming up roses. It means that you know what you care about the most and you're willing to do what it takes to get there.
So and to work through the yuck.
Yeah, because there will be yuck in life. There will be yuck in life, right? It's part of resilience. It's resilience when you apply the passion test into your life and really follow your passions. You know, when I was raising my children and I was a single mom, yeah, there was a lot of yuck. There was a lot of muck and wax and stuff going on, right? But now I look at my children. My daughter is 30 and just gave me a grandchild. My son is 33 and runs a very successful business of his own. And I'm tearing up right now because now I see the joy in those two people that I helped to create in this world, right? But I want moms to see that now. I want my daughter, as she's raising her daughter, to see the joy of raising her child, even when it's hard. She was on Instagram this week crying because it's so hard, because when her little baby hurts, she hurts. And she put her baby into daycare because they say you're supposed to do that for socialization. And now baby's sick all the time. And then she gets sick from baby being sick. And then it's hard. It's hard emotionally. It's draining. Yeah.
And then you also really wonder if you've made the right decision.
Right. You doubt yourself. Absolutely. Ask my kids. I said all the time when they were little, I don't think I'm supposed to be a mom. I'm not good at this, you know? So I was doubting myself a lot.
Yeah. How important would it be for teachers, our education system, to go through this passion test, to remind themselves, either remind themselves why they're here, why they really want to be here, or maybe they are there, but they have a better interest and they're really true to themselves so they can be true to the kids.
Jean, you're intuitive, obviously. We have been trying our hardest to get into the education system. Through the pandemic, we could see what was happening to teachers, and we wanted to bring this to them. And it's really hard to break into that, institution of education. And I've tried at the college level. You know, they do the Strength Finder often at college level. The passion test would be a good complement in addition to that. And I have a guest for you. My friend April Dahl wrote a I'm sorry, I said her name wrong. Anyway, April. April wrote a book, Becoming Awesome. And it's based in the passion test. And it's comparing people in history. And it's teaching kids lessons on how to become awesome themselves. It's based in social emotional learning. And she has that book. She has a workbook for the students. And she has a training to teach teachers how to teach it.
Amazing. Well, yes. Well, I'll get your information. We'll definitely have a conversation with her. Thank you. Thank you so much. And so anybody that's listening that has an in with schools or in that educational institution, reach out and we'll do whatever we can as a community to help you get into there, because that's just so important. And I want to switch gears before we're done here. There's so much we haven't talked about, what you need to say something, but I was going to switch gears.
I know you were going to switch gears and I know where you're going. And I asked you, but maybe we have to do another show and we'll talk all about
that. Oh, well, let's do that then. Let's skip that. Okay, let's do that.
Because this is related to the education.
Please, let's stick on that then.
I had a mother in my networking group who was so adamant about not imposing her dreams on her children that she refused to help her son decide his career path. He was in high school and he was looking at what was college going to be. And he was like trying to figure it out. And she's like, not talking about it. And he broke down. An 18-year-old young man broke down crying to his mother going, how do you expect me to figure this out if you won't talk to me about it, if you won't help me? And she said, I know who to send you to. And she hooked him up with me. I said, really, he's going to sit down with me alone and let me take him through the passion test? She's like, yeah, because that's how important it is for him to figure this out for himself. And so he did indeed. And when we got to his top five passions, they didn't say anything in there to me specifically around career. So I was like, okay, let's take those five and set them over here and let's do another thing. And let's make a list of all the professions that ever crossed your mind that you might want to do or that someone told you you'd be good at or whatever it is. Like what's floating around in there that you think you might want to do. And he gave me five different professions. His number one passion on the first list, which is what we say, is whenever you make a choice, a decision, or an opportunity, consistently choose in favor of your passion. His number one passion at 18 years old was to be a good dad and family man.
Wow.
I said, okay, can you be a doctor and be a good dad and family man? And he said, no. Just like that, he said, no. Can you be a surgeon and be a good dad and family man? And he said, no. Can you be a chiropractor and be a good dad and family man? These were the professions on his list. And he said, you know what? My aunt is a chiropractor and she brings her kids into the practice. Like she incorporates the family in. I think I should go follow her around for a few days and see what it's like to be a chiropractor. And he chose to become a chiropractor. And to this day, his mother thanks me for the confidence that he had to make that decision and persevere to becoming a chiropractor today. He's now a chiropractor in Chicago. And you have to remember, I come from Rochester, Minnesota, home of the Mayo Clinic. So lots of kids in our community are pressured to get into the medical world, and chiropractor historically was not highly regarded or considered the medical field. So he had to stand up next to his private school friends, and they said, what, you're not going to be a real doctor? You're going to be a chiropractor? And he stood up tall and he said, yes, I am. Because he knew why, in his heart, that was important to him. Wow. So cool. That's what it can mean to our kids. That's what it can mean to our kids, to choosing their career and being confident in it and living and loving it. Yes, please help me get into the school systems.
Wow, that's powerful. That's so powerful. So we're going to revisit ourselves and we're going to talk about the other pieces, including the iHug, next time. So everybody look forward to that. In the meantime, how do people get in touch with you, Luann?
LuannB.com. There's even a 30-minute free passion test session that you can click on my website. So LuannB.com is the best way. It takes you right to my calendar. Pick a time and we'll get together and have a conversation about what it could mean for you.
Luann, thank you. Thank you for bringing yourself, your energy, and your passion to the conversation. And we will get back together and carry on.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Jean.
Thank you so much for listening today. Today's show was sponsored by Seaside Solutions, my financial services company. As a business owner, it's easy to be pulled in many different directions, and often taking care of yourself plummets to the bottom of the list. For me, I find myself outside to reground. My time outdoors helps me manage my day more effectively and be more present for my clients. Through this, Discover Rising Tides was born. At Seaside Solutions, we truly believe that education is the foundation of financial wellness. Our primary focus is to provide guidance that is designed to help you achieve your long-term financial goals and visions. Working with a plan allows space for doing more things that you love, like being outside to make the inside better. If I can help you create or realign your plan, or if you would like to be added to my weekly newsletter, please let me know. This week's topic was 5 ways to set more achievable goals. Your referral means the big, beautiful world to me. And if I can help, please let me know. And thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.